Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Friday, the 4th of March. Very nice to have you with us, and we welcome you to a rather brisk, chilly Friday.
Yeah.
And we'll warm you up with good conversation. We'll try that. Welcome. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we will get to your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org is where you can write to us, and we would love to hear from you. And we mean that most of the time. And we would love to hear what's on your mind this morning. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Yo, I'm broadcasting from a secure and a strategic location.
Very nice. We hope it is warm and has appropriate throw pillows and hanging baskets.
Yes, very much like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes. Cozy. In other words. Then Ray Graff is with us. Ray, good morning.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you on the panel.
Oh, it's great to be here.
It's been a while since we've done this, so I thank you very much.
It was a pleasant kind of respite from this. Thank you.
You don't mean that. And author, organizer, activist Barbara Smith is back, and we are more than a little thrilled to have her on the program.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Thank you very much
for being with us. Well, I don't know. It seems like there could be other things to talk about, and then you just can't find any. All of this stuff going on is pretty amazing with the GOP and the Republican race for president. So last night there was a debate on Fox,
It was a demolition derby. Let's be clear.
It was a demolition derby indeed. I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, Alan, you certainly have been watching politics a lot longer than I have, but I do not recall in my lifetime ever seeing as the result of a debate for the presidency of the United States that CNN would have a headline that said, "Trump defends penis size."
Yeah. And that's the long and the short of it.
That's funny, Ray. But I have to say, in all due respect to everybody, it's got Americans really worried and looking at their hand sizes.
Oh, yeah. So. Spare me. Spare me.
Barbara's ready to leave now.
Yeah, we won't go further with this. Yeah, Barbara, I have...
No, maybe there is something to discuss. It's just so not appropriate. I think it makes us such a laughing stock.
Well, you're right. You're exactly right. It's now... If it was on Saturday Night Live, hilarious.
Yes.
But
yes,
it's real life, so
yes,
you have to cry a little bit.
Yes, and the Globe is watching.
The Globe is watching, and Ray and I were talking about this briefly, is that, you know, I don't know that, how does Saturday Night Live beat reality in this? And how does satire beat reality in this? Because you couldn't make this up. You couldn't possibly make up what's happening. So let's parse this a little bit. So yesterday, earlier in the day, and we mentioned this in yesterday's program, of course, but at that time we had not heard what he had to say. Mitt Romney had a speech. And was very clear on his desire to discredit Donald Trump. In addition to that, he called him a phony. He said that he is not fit to be president. He is a danger to democracy. And then started to detail a plan that could potentially... bring a brokered convention, and many then thought that Romney was setting this himself up to be the nominee. Oh. That this plan would be more beneficial to him than any of the other candidates who are there, and so. That is that's another thing that's playing out. Mr. Romney said, in speaking to Donald Trump after calling him a fraud and a phony, who would drive the country to the point of collapse, said he's playing the American public for suckers, and he has neither the temperament nor the judgment to be president. As soon as he was finished, John McCain, the party standard bearer, in 2008, endorsed Mr. Romney's speech and denounced Mr. Trump as a candidate who is ignorant of foreign policy and has made dangerous pronouncements on national security.
But don't you guys think that by saying he's played the American people for chumps, basically, that he is, in fact, insulting the people he's trying to convince? Don't you think? I mean, you know, all those people who are out there and say, well, you know, I voted for him. Now, you may lose a few, but let me tell you, I suspect what we're going to see in the polls are we don't care about any of this nonsense. We just see these people as desperate. And I think Romney just showed the kind of incredible fear that is going on in the Republican Party.
May I ask, Alan, who's insulting? Is it Romney who's insulting?
Romney's insulting the American people. He said, he's played you for a bunch of chumps, parenthesis, which you are, and you fell for it, and you're stupid. And as a result of that, I'm wondering whether the people who he played are going to change or whether they're going to say, you know, don't. Joe was told not to use a certain word yesterday, but, you know, go away. Hammer, screwdriver, you get the idea.
Screwed. So the point, because it's a great point, Alan, because you say to the people, okay, he's played you for chumps, and now you're not supposed to feel stupid about, because my original understanding of this whole movement of the quote-unquote Republican establishment was to bring those people back into the fold.
Yeah.
What you're seeing here playing out on national TV now for the 11th time is possibly the implosion of the Republican Party. Or at the very least, a schism of epic proportions. The hierarchy says, we don't want this guy. And everybody's lining up to try to make sure it's not this guy, who, as Alan points out, so far has most of the votes. Now, if there were not 17 people initially and now down to 4, it's unclear whether he would have had the majority of the votes if it was a more focused, like the Democratic side, where there were basically 3 and then 2 candidates. But right now, it looks like that this party will never be the same.
Go ahead, Alan.
I just want to say that I've heard that about Democrats and Republicans in the past. If they learn their lessons, and there are a couple of lessons to be learned here, you know, then they'll come right. They'll come roaring right back, especially if the Democrats screw it up. Right now, you know, they're all over themselves. Last night, Trump saying how polls, the national polls, are showing him, get ready for this, folks, winning.
Well, to me, there's some things that are just being overlooked and forgotten. The fact that Mitt Romney wanted and pursued Trump's endorsement when he ran in 2012, despite the fact that Trump was saying and had a whole campaign around whether our president had been born in the United States or if he was indeed a Manchurian candidate who had been put in by some very nefarious methods. That didn't bother Mitt Romney back then. The Republican Party has played to these kinds of attitudes since the mid-1960s.
Yeah, but
they're reaping exactly the ground that they prepared.
Yes, and you know, the race has been to the right, right? And the race has been to the right. What they've wanted to do is to say, I'm the most conservative person. The irony is, there's Trump last night saying, you know, you want me because I know how to talk to everybody, including Hillary Clinton, which is why I gave her money and everybody else. I know how to do that, and that makes me the better candidate. And the people who support him nod their heads and say, yes, the people we all assumed that the most right-wing candidate was going to be the one who won. Are you following me?
I am. I was fascinated last night during this debate because Senator Cruz and Rubio were because they were not going after each other last night, and it seems to go in with Romney's plan and even what Senator McCain was suggesting, which is that even if you don't all, like, we're going to, Kasich, Rubio, Cruz, we're all going to stay in the race, and if we win this state, we win that state, and we all do our thing, it is going to be splintered enough so that he will not have a clear majority going in to the convention, and then we can discuss this. And there seemed to be almost some sort of conversation between those three candidates as to how that was going to play out. Now, whether that's the case or not, I don't know.
Well, I don't know if you stuck around to the end of that, whatever they called that last night. But at one point, Kasich said, listen, Romney doesn't make my strategy for me.
Right.
And so I think there may be a question about what I think they might ultimately end up doing that anyway, but I don't think that they will say they're going to do that.
And there's one other thing. These guys are, there's another invisible elephant on the table here, which is there's now this huge sort of groundswell. We have to run a different candidate. Remember we talked about that yesterday, or we at least have to have a third party effort here denying Trump if he becomes the candidate. And then Trump coming back and saying, hey, look, guys, you know, I can run as a third party candidate also. And everybody who you're trying to get away with is going to go with me. So now you have on the table this idea of a split party.
It is striking. There are so many things that you could discuss and talk about in a logical and try to in an intelligent and logical way. Look at and investigate the statements that were made last night. That seems rather fruitless given the random nature. I have to give Fox credit last night. I thought they did a very good job in trying to pin Donald Trump down and saying, look, this is what you said. Let's roll the videotape from just the past few months. And you have him saying, okay, I support Vladimir Putin, and then him on the stage saying, no, I don't. And they kept on going through this over and over and over again of saying, okay, but and Trump's very, offhanded remark was, well, a person is allowed to change their mind, and a person is allowed to have their positions change. And one of the, I believe it was Chris Wallace, says, yes, but within a week, and it seems as if you don't remember what you said.
Damning.
Well, that's the beauty of it. I mean, he looks at them and he says, no, that's not right. They said, what's not right? They said, it's not right. Or, you know, Ted Cruz, Ted, you're a liar. Or Marco, you're little Marco. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Kasich came out looking best, I thought, last night.
Oh, absolutely.
At least he spoke of issues. And it's funny, the first couple of minutes, my gosh, they're all going to talk about issues. And then it devolved so fast. It was unbelievable.
And you say that about Kasich, and you know, from in a rational sense, yes, he looked the best. But as far as anybody who's going to vote for him, I don't know.
Yeah, out there, they're all yelling at the top of their voices, Kasich, you're boring.
It was like a wrestling match. People yelling in the audience and getting thrown out.
Yeah, where did they get that crowd?
Well, I think they give them each a third.
Is that how it works?
I think they give them a fifth of something. A couple of cocktails, you're good to go.
I want to get to letters. We're going to take a break before we do, and then we'll. I hear pinging, so I know that a lot of letters are coming in. We have a lot of folks who want to get in on this. And you know, I just want to, as we have a minute and a half left, that the New York Times asked the question, who won the debate? And they say, maybe no one.
Yeah, it's what National Review said. There were no shortage of losers.
And including the American public, we would add. There were insults, genitalia jokes, even some discussion of foreign policy on Thursday night in the 11th Republican presidential debate. Commentators and pundits thought that Donald Trump weathered attacks from both sides, that Senator Cruz delivered a crisp performance, that Senator Marco Rubio had some of the best zingers, and that John Kasich stuck to the playing the grown-up in the room. Mm. Although I have to say, I thought Rubio looked like
tired.
Really tired, he sounded sick, he looked sick, and just kind of fed up with the whole thing.
There have been 11 debates.
Yeah.
It's grueling.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will get to the letters. You have a lot of them, and then we'll get to some other issues as well. There are other things happening in the world. We'll talk about those and get your thoughts on what's happening in our world after this short break. Morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel and to our discussion this morning. According to my device, Alan, we have a lot of letters.
Yes. Can I just speak to that for a moment?
Absolutely.
Yesterday, we had a couple of letters saying basically, how dare you? You didn't read my letter yesterday. Well, we had about 1,000 letters. I mean, you know.
Well, you're right.
Give me a break, will you, please?
You know, I felt bad because people thought that we were that they had offended us or that they had said something that was and that's not the case at all. If you write them and we get to them and then we try to move on to other things and then if it's not within that the window is sort of closed. But we do, as you can hear, we get to as many as we possibly can.
And many are offensive, and it doesn't matter. We read them anyway.
So with that said, let's start. There you go. You can start with the letters, Alan, and we're off to the races.
Okay. So, we heard from Cody, the Greenfield Cody, because apparently there are two, and he identifies himself. Good morning, panel. I don't usually partake in schadenfreude, but the abysmal state of the Republican Party and their frantic scramble to rid themselves of their own Frankenstein creation is quite satisfying. Trump, as front runner, exposes the seedy and the low information voters that compromise the base of that party. Also, it's great to have Ray on the panel.
Thank you very much. Keep it up.
And by the way, Ray, he's not alone. We're getting a lot of pro-Ray letters.
You see, that's what happens. You have me on every couple of months, and that'll happen.
Ray said, quote, and this is from a different person, Ray said...
Another Cody.
I'll debate grueling schedule, but
11 debates.
11 debates. Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, sorry about that. But WMC has discussion and declares, and what?
No,
and debates every day, and it is intelligent. It is intelligent. Thank you. I don't know. You know, in this location, Joe, the little. The machine that I'm using has little tiny letters.
Okay, all right. Got to get you a ticker tape.
Yeah. Okay, and Bonnie says, schadenfreude is too painful. The Tea Party chickens of 09 have come home to roost, and the matter turns fecal. Whoa.
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch. Okay, and then Alexis says, there's a scene in the movie, The Sandlot, where the two opposing baseball teams, made up of 11 and 12-year-old boys, meet for a war of words. They go back and forth with each team leader trying to out-insult the other. It was a very funny scene, but that was a movie, and last night was reality. How sad that the American voter has Trump, Rubio, and Cruz as possible choices for the highest job in the world. And that's from Alexis. Okay, and then we heard from David. And David said, why was there no mention of Social Security in the debate? And then we heard, let's see. I'm going down the list here as fast as I possibly can. So sorry. And then we heard from Rubio. We heard from Roger talking about Rubio.
I was like, wow, that'd be cool.
He looked under the weather, apparently because, as it was reported, he had the flu, and presumably still does, unless, of course, it's all a fabrication. And that's from Roger. Okay, and then we heard...
I can believe people can get so sick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Especially if you're out there on the campaign trail.
They're not just doing 11 debates. They're doing, like, 20-hour days for months on end.
Kissing all those babies and everything.
Shaking a lot of hands with viruses on them. Yeah.
Yeah, gross.
And just not getting any sleep.
And he's a little guy, and he doesn't have that much, energy.
Ouch. You know, really? You have to do that?
Ray is very funny this morning. Glad I tuned in, says Barbara. There you go,
I think so, too.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for saving us.
And then we heard from Sean, who said, the debate was Fox, the establishment, and the other candidates against Trump. The moderators were debating Trump, and Rubio interrupted Trump on every topic. Talk about exasperation and desperation.
Same thing with the CNN debate, though. I don't think you can pin this on the network.
No, I think you're going after the front runner. It's everybody is going after the front runner, and you have a target on your back, and that makes perfect sense. I think we've seen that throughout debate history.
I saw on the news that Bernie is going to do a Fox event on Fox TV. I don't know exactly when it's going to be, but that ought to be interesting.
Can somebody tell me, because you're a brilliant panel, can somebody tell me exactly what is it about Trump, other than his front runner status, that has got the Republicans so scared?
His views.
And the fact that he's incompetent. Well, he would be incompetent to govern.
I just think he lacks a filter, and I think it scares the powers that be as far as the general election goes. He lacks a sort of classic filter.
And perhaps they think he can't win.
About that, it looks like he can win. And that's the scary thing.
I'm not talking about the nomination. I'm talking about the president.
No, I'm talking about the presidency.
Okay.
Well, I mean, let's get
our premises clarified. If they think he can win the presidency, then what I said to begin with, they think and they know he's incompetent to govern. If it's about he can't win the nomination, then maybe it's the other thing.
You know, I think it's that he doesn't get that they're afraid that they won't get their plunder. And by that I mean, you know, there's a certain, you know, camaraderie around politicians. They know what they have to do. And here comes Trump, and they're afraid, you know, he'll coalesce with the Democrats or he'll coalesce with whoever he has to make a deal with at a particular time, and they sure don't like that.
You know, Trump had mentioned a poll but in the fact-checking, all of the polls that the most recent polls showing him losing to both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in a general election matchup by a sizable margin.
Yeah, 10 points.
So I think, I mean, that's interesting to look at, and I think probably why they are also scared. But, you know, also we have a guy who's talking about building walls. And I mean, Stephen Colbert had a good line on his show on Monday night when he was talking about Trump's response to the David Duke and Ku Klux Klan issue, of saying that he has no trouble. He doesn't have to take a second thought of keeping out Mexicans or Syrian refugees. But when it comes to the Ku Klux Klan, he has to think about it.
Yes. Yeah. And that shows exactly where he's coming from and exactly what's going on. That discussion you had last Thursday when the question was raised and skepticism was expressed about whether he was a racist. Look at all the things that have happened since that day last week. For those who could not figure that out already. It is absolutely frightening.
We heard from Joseph in Philadelphia, your town.
Yeah, my hometown.
But it's not you. Let's make it clear it's not
That's
you.
I'm right here. I'm not in Philly anymore.
He says, quote, Alan's reading of letters slows down the show and, capital letters, eats up valuable time. Okay. Thank you very much for that, Joe. Always nice to know that there are good people out there. Okay. Let's go here. Ian says... not Arian. Trump is the living embodiment of all things the GOP pretends not to be. Interesting. John says it would be worth discussing Donald Trump's, statement, the military will perform whatever orders he gives regardless of their legality. That was an amazing line. Don't you think, every panel? He said, they'll listen to me. What if they don't do it? They'll listen to me. They have to. I am an officer in the U.S. Navy, currently retired from active duty, and have been a member of the military for 25 years. I assure you the United States military enlisted and officers are taught that you shall only obey all lawful orders from senior officers and the president. The emphasis is on lawful. We were further taught we have a duty to not only obey, to not obey unlawful orders. It is clear to anyone torturing and killing non-combatants will be breaking the law. This defense cannot be used, as many in history have tried, a member of the German military in World War II and others. Thank you. And that's from John. And moving right along. Right, Joe?
We can do it for another minute or so. Okay. And then.
And then Daniel says, re-third party candidates minus Ralph Nader. Gore would have won. In 1948, Henry Wallace entered the race as a third party candidate. And guess what? Truman won anyway. Thought Trump as a third party will mean Hillary as our next president. Well, there are a lot of ways of looking at that one, folks. A lot of ways. It could be and it could not be. Let's see here. Doug says, Sunday night as I watched the Oscars got nearly swept by Mad Max Fury Road, a slasher film posing as a sci-fi set in screaming car chase throughout the wasteland. I was thinking that maybe Donald Trump really does represent American values. And then there's a longer letter, and I'm not reading it all because it goes past Ray's discussion of how many we're allowed to use, how many characters we're allowed to use.
You being two one. Characters. Yeah. That's it.
Play with two characters.
Yeah, yes or no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Robert says, why all the surprise about the debates in Trump? The Republicans have been spewing this hatred, anger, racism for years. It's good to hear that you folks at WAMZ, et cetera, are doing well. A lot of us aren't, and it's improving, and it is not improving, and there's a lot of anger and desperation, some of it rational, some of it not. Yesterday, the TU, it was hard to learn to turn a page and not see an image or an article about Trump. In short, he proves once again there is no such thing as bad publicity. Now, the Republicans' hate-spewing party pot calls its errant child kettle black. I love it. And there you are from Bob.
Yeah, I need to respond to that.
Absolutely.
I actually said quite a few minutes ago that the Republican Party has prepared the ground for just these kinds of politics.
Yep, you did
and
say
just
that.
The kind of ideology that Trump is so very, very good at telegraphing and conveying to a large part of the disaffected electorate. So it's not like he just arose out of thin air. And I just want to, I think that was directed at all of us. I actually said pretty much the same thing.
But what does it
words.
Say about society if that many people are on board? Is our society, in fact, now at a tipping point?
I think so. I think that there are lots of people who are disaffected. We could get into the details of, like, you know, what happened after World War II when we were in a boom economy, how the factories closed, how you can no longer make a good living even with a high school, you know, a diploma, and sometimes even with a college degree. There are a lot of people who are hurting. The middle class is in disarray. We know that there are many, many families that cannot expect their children to do better than they themselves did. That's new in U.S. society. These are children who can't expect to buy homes themselves, although they grew up in homes that were owned by their family. There's a lot of disaffection out there. But what happens in this country almost without fail is that it goes to racism and xenophobia. And he's brilliant. He is absolutely tapping in to all of that. And the Republican Party has done that, too, with their dog whistle politics.
Yes, and Barbara, one of the things that really got me yesterday, I guess it's the thing that gets me the most, is when Cruz, who I find particularly difficult, talked about the Republican Party as the party of Lincoln.
And that is so much baloney. I can't say the other thing on the air, but that is so much baloney because in those days, in the mid-19th century, the Republican Party was the progressive alternative.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And the thing is that to claim and invoke President Lincoln, who many people think arguably was our greatest president because he kept the Union together, to invoke him as being in the tradition of, absurd. It is absurd. And I'm not saying that Lincoln, because I'm not so naive, I know too much about African American and U.S. history to think that he was actually anti-racist in his politics. He wanted to keep the Union together. He began to see, I think, at a certain point that slavery was really wrong. But it's not like he was, you know, a Bernie Sanders, for example. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but he was a statesman. He was a statesman.
Yeah. But Cruz, of all people, you know, this guy and his phalanx of Praetorian Guard are always trying to figure out how to keep people out of the polls, for example, how to put on all kinds of rules that would prevent people from getting involved in elections.
And that disenfranchisement is primarily aimed at people of color, women,
without
older
question.
People, younger people, working people. It's as I said, it's really, it's quite a mess.
We have to go to a break, Alan, but I have a letter request. Could you read the one from Tony, please?
No, you read it because I'm really flibbergasted here.
Okay. Tony writes, I'll put in my two cents first in Street Talk and then clinically. Nobody is even considering how sick, or to put it differently, dysfunctional all of these candidates are. They all need therapy, Thorazine, and rubber rooms to help them deal with the lunacy they defined as normalcy. We must be the laughingstock of the Western world to let these chumps get to where they've gotten. Doesn't anybody else have chutzpah to call these out-of-their-mind fools out for what they are?
Well, he's putting it into a psychological context. I mean, I guess we could put it into more than one context, but it does seem to be dysfunctional.
It certainly does.
But it's working.
well, yeah, but for who? We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll finish up. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Adirondack Sports Summer Expo, an upstate New York run, hike, bike, paddle, triathlon, and healthy living show with 125 exhibitors, activities, and more. March 5th and 6th at the Saratoga Springs City Center, adksports.com. And Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy on UAlbany's downtown campus, offering full, part-time, and evening studies in public administration and policy. albany.edu/Rockefeller.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Ray Graff, Alan Chartok, and Barbara Smith with us this morning, and we welcome your letters. Two quick things I want to get to before the end of the program. One is there is the story that there was a staffer, a national security staffer, who got immunity. And there is a signal now that this is in the Hillary Clinton email story. And what does that mean for Hillary Clinton? What does the former staffer's immunity mean for secretary? And the question is also, does this mean that this investigation is coming to an end? The revelation that the Justice Department had granted immunity to a former State Department staff member who worked on Hillary Clinton's private email server is a likely indication that the investigation is nearing a conclusion, but should not be read as a sign that the leading Democratic presidential candidate is going to face criminal charges, according to legal experts.
That it does not indicate?
Yes, that's right.
Doesn't necessarily mean. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's what they're putting out there, mm-hmm. But I'll tell you one thing. If I was Hillary Clinton, I'd be very nervous right now. I mean, you know, why do you give immunity other than here's a possibility. The Justice Department is giving immunity to Hillary, and I don't mean this critically. I really don't. To do CYA, cover their behinds, in order to say, okay, we tried everything we possibly could to do this, and we didn't find any evidence. That's one possibility. The other possibility is you don't give immunity unless you have a target most of the time. And no matter what you're reading in the New York Times today or anywhere else, it can't be a good sign for Hillary.
And I guess we don't, and that's sort of looming, right? We won't know for a while as to what the outcome of that will be. So it's sort of just the shoe waiting to drop.
Yeah, and all I can say, if that happened, Joe, are two words. Can you tell me those two words?
Are we allowed to say them on the radio?
No, you are not.
Okay.
Bigger than a breadbasket.
Okay.
The two words. Ray, you want to take a shot at it?
Nope.
Barbara?
No.
Joe Biden.
Oh, Joe Biden. Yeah, right.
Those are my two words.
Who has a fascinating editorial in the New York Times this morning on...
Op-ed. Yep.
An op-ed on the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
And the importance.
At what date, at what point does it become... impossible. In other words, if this drags on and Hillary wins the nomination,
yep,
and the investigation continues and continues and continues, and then at some point,
like October,
yeah,
or
they
September,
say, well, you know what? We got to indict on this. What happens then? Is it too late for Biden to get in?
I don't think it's ever too late before a convention. Because, you know, if anything could happen, she could drop out. It could be an embarrassment. I don't think that's going to happen, but it could be.
When is the convention? Are they in September, early September, or late August?
They're late July, early August, because or they both can be in August, and it just depends. And I don't. We were saying this yesterday. I don't know which one is first, but everything is tied up and ready before Labor Day, so that they mm-hmm. can start the
right.
full election cycle.
Right.
We heard from Douglas, who said Alan is right on the mark. I like to read these.
Oh boy!
It's all about the plunder and the power they'll lose if Trump or Bernie becomes the next president.
All right.
But he said.
The other issue, well, go ahead. If you want another couple letters, and then we'll.
Well, the only reason I like to read those letters is because it says something like Alan is absolutely
yeah.
right.
Yes.
Signed Alan.
From an undisclosed location.
Why do you think I'm in an undisclosed location? Okay. About Antonin Scalia. Not long ago, Scalia told an interviewer in New York Magazine, September 26th, that he had canceled his subscription to the Washington Post and received his news from the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times, owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, a Unification Church, and conservative talk radio. And I'm truly shocked that our highest federal jurist lived in this bubble and based his opinion on those of Lindbergh's ilk. I suspect, Anne, for whatever it's worth, that it may have been the other way around. People tend to look for news outlets which endorse their views. You don't get changed by reading them. Or at least most people don't. What is Barbara talking about? Says Michael. I just heard unemployment is down 4.9, heading to full employment. Our president has done a terrific job creating jobs, and that's from Michael. Barbara.
There are other economic markers of whether our population is doing well overall. I'm not an economist, and I'm trying to think of some of them. But I think that digging into the employment numbers, and I heard that report too on the news today. Digging into it, how many people are working above minimum wage?
Jobs? That's the issue.
How many people are able to afford to buy their own home?
Yeah.
How many people are able to go to college and afford to go to college? There are studies that show that young people who grow up in poverty, even if they're equally matched academically with more affluent young people, their age peers and counterparts, that they have a much less chance of going to college, even though they're equally qualified.
Yeah.
So when you have those kinds of barriers to opportunity, it is telling on the society. And I think, you know, it's not that I disagree with the employment figures. I was delighted to hear it, too, that they seem to be pretty solid over the last few months. But there are other markers. How many children
yeah.
in the United States live in poverty? An appalling number.
Yeah, yeah. And Roger wrote, Joe, I know we got to get off, but glad to hear that Alan is coming around on the subject of Hillary. With the rest of the roundtablers, please do the same. Roger, where have you been? I've been talking about Bernie for a long time and who I voted for. So don't make stuff up, is my point.
Ouch.
Yes.
All right. We are just about out of time. I want to thank everybody who took part, and certainly and that goes, of course, for Alan and his enjoy your location, wherever you may be.
Yeah, I got it.
All right. Enjoy it. Well, thank you very much, Alan. Have a good weekend. Raymond, thank you very much. And
see you in 3 months.
Barbara, always good to see you.
Thank you
very
much.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.